is the operator. I'd just like to inform all participants that this call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Go ahead. You may begin.
Alan, would you like a quick roll call?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's PEDNR call on Tuesday, the 26th of January. We have Alan Greenberg, Siva Mutusami, Tatiana Kramsova, Cheryl Langdon Orr, James Sladel, Paul Diaz, Elaine Doolan, Barry Cobb, Michaeli Malon. From staff, we have Gisela Gruber-White, Marika Konings, Glenda Saint-Géry, Margie Milam, and we have apologies from Mason Cole, Ted Suzuki, and Mikey O'Connor, who may be late on the call, and if he's not able to make the call, they'll send his apologies. I can also remind everyone, please, to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Alan.
Thank you. Should we add Cheryl's chickens onto the attendance list?
I was wondering what that was.
Since they're making themselves heard, I think they should get credit for it.
We're very noisy at the moment because the.
No comment. Okay, we have there's a request to add as any other business, some points brought over from the RAB group, and I think Michaeli and or Cheryl will be presenting that at the end of the meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Anything else?
I nominate Cheryl.
Rubbish. You're already nominated. Stop.
You can fight over it at the end of the meeting. Is there any other change that needs to be done to the agenda? Then I would suggest we start. I trust you have all gone over these documents with a fine-tooth comb and have a whole bunch of things to raise, either for clarification or whatever. I'm going to try to keep an eye on the Adobe room to see who puts up their hand, but I'm also looking at a document which is printed in such fine print that I have to squint. So, unfortunately, I did it before Marika sent the new version. So if someone is being ignored, please just call out. I would suggest we do it row by row and see if there's any comments, questions, or whatever. And I'll start with row zero. Marika, can you explain the call? First of all, can you explain the lettering? Is there any pattern to it, or is it just to mystify us?
It's just to mystify you. It's completely random, so
well,
that no
works.
One can is able to figure out which letter is which registrar.
Okay. I do have one request regarding the number of columns. It really applies to during the report, but I'll mention it now. I found it very confusing that we have 11 columns. Two registrars have been collapsed into one column. I think we either need to separate it into two columns, which happen to be the same, or reduce the number of registrars to 9, because otherwise the statistics keep on getting confused when we're talking about 9 in some cases and 10 in another. So I don't know how other people feel about that. But I think it's going to be a lot clearer if we take the two registrars, which are in fact identical, and treat them as a single one for the point of view of the survey. Does anyone have any problem with that? Hearing no screams and seeing no hands, perhaps we can have that done for the next time we look at this. Okay.
So just to clarify then, so you want just to have one column, and basically in the registrar survey refer to 9 registrars and calculate the according percentage instead of 10.
I think so. Otherwise, we've identified the registrar by duplicating the column, and the intent was not to do that. One can figure this out, but we're not supposed to make it too easy. And I don't think we're still representing the same number of registrants. So I think it's easier if we work out of 9 and we don't have any confusion.
Yeah, and I presume for the calculation we'll leave the biggest one in and take the smallest of the two out.
Oh, I was going to merge them together for the purposes of the thing. If you want to be scrupulous about it and say there's only 9 registrars, then yes, you could take the smaller one out. I don't have any real objection either way. Can you explain the comment you have in the title line of G?
And that is basically the answers in that column is based on the information I found in the registration agreement or you know, other documents on the registrar website, but I still have not received feedback from the registrar. I received several emails saying that they would get back to me and they're working on it and they're really working on it and they need a little bit more time, but I still haven't received it. So this is basically just to highlight that this is, you know, what I found. You know, I can, you know, provide people with the documents on the basis of which I come up with these answers, but it's, you know, some of the information is not filled in because I didn't get an answer or a response from the registrar.
That makes eminent sense. I read it exactly the opposite. That is, you had not verified it, but it was completed by the registrar.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll make that not verified, or I'll figure something out.
Okay. I'm probably the only one who read it that way. Any comments online on item one? Hearing nothing. I have a comment on 1A, and the comment has little to do with the substance of the answers, other than some registrars treated this as the auto-renew between a registrar and registry, which I think is what we meant, and some treated it as the auto-renew between the registrant and registrar, which I think highlights the fact that we need to carefully define these terms and make sure we use different terms for the different relationships. It happens again a few other times later on in the survey. And if registrars interpret these words differently, I don't think there's a hope in anything for an innocent registrant wandering up to understand the correct meaning. Shiva? Is Shiva there? Hand is up.
Can you hear me? Hello? Can you
Yes.
hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. From the spreadsheet, I can see that the practices between registrars vary on all the points. So that is an indication that we need a certain degree of common practices among registrars to be specified, or something like minimum standards of practices among registrars. So
okay.
The practices are so different at the moment.
Okay, I think you're jumping the gun of trying to come to conclusions about what we do on it. Right now, we're just trying to review the specific answers and see what we understand from them, not look at the remedies, if any, are needed. Any other comments on line 1A? 1B? My comments here is that the range is interesting. The range is anywhere from an unknown for column Q, the second to last one, up until it looks like 11 or 12 messages. There still are a few that are marked saying that they do it at their convenience, but not as a contractual obligation. Marika, did we not get a statement at one point that was in violation of the RAA?
This is Marika. I've actually raised it with the compliance team, and they're going to look into it because, of course, and I'm speaking here as a non-lawyer, and no one, you know, has confirmed or denied whether it's the case. Because my question would be, although they state that they're, you know, it's a convenience, they are actually doing it. So does it mean that they're not in compliance just because they say that they don't have an obligation? Because they do fulfill the obligation by sending the notices. And you know, so I forwarded those two cases to compliance to give their view on it, and you know, if necessary, raise it with the registrars in question.
Okay, so we haven't gotten an answer back from compliance on that yet. For two of them, the shaded column, which implies there is only one message, and column Q, the second to last one, is silent on when the messages are sent. Is that something you still plan to follow up on? I know on the shaded column you're still trying to follow up, but on column Q, it doesn't talk about when they're sent at all, and that is one of the questions we asked.
I'm happy to follow up on that one.
Okay. Any other hands? No hands, no screams? 1C? We have Ron?
Yes. I would only make a point. This is back on 1B.
Okay.
Your point of the convenience and not complying with the RAA.
Mm-hmm.
The issue, while someone may say their lawyer won't let them say, well, we'll send an email, the agreements don't go so far to be so protective as to say that upon registration, a careful lawyer would say, oh, we may or not, as a convenience to the registrant, we may or may not forward the registration to the registry. So I don't think notifications...
Well, we may or may not take your money.
Yeah, right. Right. So those things don't appear. They seem anxious to take your money. It's only on the... They're only careful on the renewal aspect.
I think that's noted, and we'll come back to that when we look at what we do as the next steps. Any other comments on 1B while we're back to it, or 1C? Again, I'll note, if you read the words carefully, we're looking at anywhere from not specified and presumably zero to we may or may not, up to about four messages, depending on how you count them, during the period of time. So wide variation. And variation itself is not bad. 1D, any comments? 1D is, does the registrar make substantial changes to who is? The summary of the answer seems to be yes, no, maybe, or sometime. One E. I have a question. Marika, can you explain what the answer to B is? I have a very hard time parsing it because I see acronyms that I'm not familiar with.
Sorry, which question are you asking about? The answer
we're talking
one
about
E by B?
One E, the very first column. I have several
mm-hmm.
questions on this row, but the first column is the one I'm looking at now.
What's a specific question you have on that one?
Well, I'm not. What is an extended redemption period? That says 120 days. I didn't think there was any period that was 120 days. Even if you add up the RGP and the auto renew grace period, I don't think they come up to 120. I don't remember.
I will check in their agreement. I'm just scrolling down if it's described somewhere else because I think they did outline in their agreement what they meant with it. But.
Okay. If you could clarify that a little bit, because it's confusing as I read it. And my next question also on this line, does no one else have any comments? Everyone else understood everything? My next question is in column S, as in Stephen. It says, such renewal after the expiry of the registration may not result in the exact reinstatement of the registration in the same form as it was prior to expiry. What does that mean?
I think that's how it was put in the in the registration agreement. So,
how can they reinstate it and still have it and have a change in that? James has an answer or a question. James?
James does not have an answer. James has a request,
okay.
Which is that the font is way too small for me to read on this screen. So I opened the spreadsheet in a separate application, which renumbered and relettered all of the columns. So if we can find a different way to specify where we're reading from, I think that would be helpful.
James, if you go back to Adobe, there's a little slider at the top. Which
yes,
will change
I've played with that for a good 15, 20 minutes, and I finally gave up and opened it in Excel. So, so if you can give us, you know, number before or after the shaded bar, I think that's a good landmark or point of reference that can help.
Okay, we're
that
on.
That would be very helpful.
We're on row 1E now.
Yes, I got
the
that.
Question. Okay, and the third to the end.
Okay.
Hold on. Fourth to the end. Sorry. The one with a lot of words. And I'm looking at a sentence starting just about at 40% into it, saying such renewal after expiry of the registration may not result in the exact reinstatement of the registration in the same form as it was prior to expiry. I'm trying to understand what that might mean.
If you read the next sentence, I think it means that the cost of your registration might be different at that point. Because that's what they said. And however, in practice, the cost prior and post-expiration provided during the autumn grace period is exactly the same. So I think what it's trying to say is that you might pay a different price for your registration. That's theoretically possible, but in practice, you know, it is the same. And I think that's what's meant with in the same form.
If what it means by registration may not be in the same form, meaning the price differs, I guess they have really good lawyers. All right. And lastly, in the very last column of that row, we have, according to the registration agreement, the RAE has the possibility to renew the domain name registration for the regular renewal period for 3 days after expiration. After that, until 40 days after expiration, an extra fee may be applied in practice. Fine. This often depends on whether the registrant renews through a reseller or with the registrar. Fees to renew after expiry are comparable to the registrar's normal renewal fees for direct customers. But a few lines up, it said they may be different. It says they'd be the same for the first 3 days, and then after 40 days, an additional fee may apply, but then it says they'll be the same. So, again, I'm just a little bit confused.
That's where the sentence comes in. In practice, it often depends on whether the registrar renews through a reseller or directly with the registrar. So basically saying if the person directly renews with the registrar, the fees are comparable to the registrar's normal renewal fee. If they, however, renew through a reseller, it might be different and an additional fee might apply.
All right, I'm not sure it says that, but I'll believe you. Any other questions on this row? We're on 1F. I have nothing on 1F. 1F is at what point does the DNS change? 1G. Does the new page explicitly say that the original registration has expired and how it can be reclaimed? In general, the answer is yes with one or two exceptions. Sorry, is that Michele?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was trying to unmute myself and managed to kill the call by accident.
Okay.
Well, kept yourself from the call, Michele, not the whole call.
All right.
Sorry.
But you weren't trying to comment on this point.
I'm a small bit confused as to which section you're looking at. This spreadsheet is really, really hard to view.
Okay, did you know about the slider at the top which increases the size?
Oh, I'm looking at the spreadsheet here in Excel. I'm not trying to use the Adobe.
Okay, we were just on line, the question 1G.
Okay, 1G.
And there was no comments on that, and we're just about to go on to 1H.
Okay, fine. It says, just repeat every couple of seconds which question it is, because it's really easy to lose oneself in this Excel spreadsheet.
I will do my best.
Sorry, Alan, it's just, I'm trying my best here.
Well, you saw my email to Marika last night.
Now, and now I'm beginning to understand why.
All right. Marika, I think we brought this up at an earlier meeting. Did you have any follow-up on, we're looking at the second registrar column, which says even after they change the DNS, they deliver email?
Yes, this is Marika again. So I did exchange some emails, but I still don't have a conclusive answer. And I'll actually remind the person again that, because I think the last word I got was that he was going to check back with some of his technical people to find out indeed exactly what was meant with that, and I haven't heard back yet. So
okay.
The
reason I'm pushing it is I'm worried that there is, in at least one other place, I think it's in this row later on, where people misunderstand the concept of delivering email and are really talking about the email to the registrant, the warning, the notices and such. And I want to make sure that we are talking about email destined for the domain name. The next one is the fourth to last column, which starts, all emails are sent to the customer name on record in the registrar system. Again, this sounds like the question they were asking is, what about email going that is being sent to the domain? Or are they really forwarding email, any email that comes in for any address on the domain, they forward it to the contact? It would be really interesting to make sure that that is what they're doing, because it's possible but highly unbelievable.
This is what I understand here is that basically they're saying that they will always have an email, or they normally should have an email on file that's not linked to the domain name itself, which I guess they interpreted as meaning that the email should get to the registrant.
Yes, that's what I'm worried about, that they're talking about the email from the registrar to the registrant, whereas we were talking about email from third parties with the domain name in question as the target.
Yeah, star.whatever.net.
Well, you know, if alangreenberg.com is the domain that has just expired, what happens when someone sends mail to alan@alangreenberg.com? We agonized over how this was worded, so I...
Yes, I think you're right. I think some have interpreted this as meaning how does the registrar get to the registrant if it bounces, but not how third... Unless they set it up as an automatic forward, but I guess that's unlikely. I don't know if any of the registrars would do something like that. But.
No, I agree. It's conceivable. It's technically possible. It's highly unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer to Q, the second to last one, is the same misinterpretation. Any other thoughts? No hands up. All right. Any questions on 1E, 1I? This is talking about the RAE's contact mail uses the domain name that has expired. I have nothing there. 1J. Okay. I have nothing for a while, so does anyone have anything prior to 1-0? That's the top of the third page, I think, if you're looking at the original document. Ron?
Yes. My only comment is that much of the stuff following the the DNS question is interrelated. So looking at the individual responses, there may not be questions, but it's very difficult. And this when I was reading this offline in preparation, then I couldn't always get a consistent thing reading all of the responses, because some of them just technically didn't make any sense, but only when they were reviewed vertically, not just horizontally. So that's, it makes it somehow, we're going to have to work that out. Even though these can be consistent viewed horizontally as we are, I don't think it always makes sense. Well, that isn't very clear. I'll just shut up now.
Well, I don't think anyone can argue with you. Presumably the registrar who answered these questions thought it was consistent. There are occasionally things at odds, and I think that's our responsibility to try to find. I'm not sure there's any magic way to do it,
mm-hmm.
other than to sort of read them in both directions and try to remember or look back up if you think there's a related row.
Right.
I don't have any magic answer for it. I wish I did. I mean, I spent a good number of hours looking over these, and I assume many of you others also did. Any other thoughts on particular lines up until row 0, 1-0? Only two things on this. Obviously, there's a blank column for the registrar that hasn't answered, and that we need to follow up on. The other thing I note, and this is one of the first things I mentioned, and that's a definition issue, that if you look at the renew grace period in our question and then in the one-fourth from the end, they talk about an auto-renew grace period. And again, I think we're dealing with a situation here where different people have interpreted the question different ways because of the lack of clearly defined terms for all of the periods and all of the relationships. Michele?
Dallin, just in relation to kind of practicality and being aware of the fact that I'm losing my hair and going grayer.
I'm ahead of you, though.
I'm sure you are. Actually, yes, I have met you, so yes, I do remember. You are slightly ahead of me. You also have the advantage of a few years on me. Just with all due respect, I mean, I think at this juncture, we've gone backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards with regard to the registrar questionnaire. I mean, couldn't one just draw a line in the sand and say, look, best efforts were made to get answers to all these questions, and, you know, this is what we got. I mean, going back again and again and again, trying to get answers to one or two minor questions at this juncture, it doesn't seem to be particularly fruitful. I mean, there's quite a lot of data has been collected from people, and, you know, surely that's enough to work on.
Any other thoughts? I guess my answer is this is the first time we're looking at the whole thing and looking at all of the answers in light of the other ones. Certainly it's the first time I have done that. And just for the record, I'm just about completed my list. I don't know about if anyone else has any general comments. Barry?
Thanks, Alan. Yes, this is Barry. I guess, for starters, pardon me, I'll have to apologize that I really, you know, like you just said, I haven't had a chance to really soak this in a comprehensive manner like we're doing right now. I was familiar with what we had been working from with the PowerPoint slides, which were useful in terms of trying to gauge what the process looks like and some of the variances in it. Now we're looking at this comprehensively, and whether I think for those that have reviewed every cell and that might have a question or two, to those that haven't had a chance to review this, I think in this format it's kind of a little overwhelming to kind of soak in, if you will. So I'm not even able to follow along, and had I looked through every cell, I think it'd be a little bit difficult to follow along. So I offer up that after this call, if you don't mind, I'll take a stab at kind of making some slight modifications to the spreadsheet that may enable us to more easily read in reference to what's going on with the question, so that we can look at these vertically and horizontally, like was which was discussed. So I think that'll help kind of clarify how we read it, because when you refer to row 1B, you know, if we're looking at it in the spreadsheet, that's really row 6 or 7.
No, no, my row numbers, just for clarification, was the number of the question. It's within the text of the leftmost box.
Right. So at any rate, I'm going to offer up to spend a little bit of time to help us more clearly read some of these responses, and then I'll pass it back out to the list. So I think it'll help if at next week we did determine that we do need to review these on the call. So I'll offer that up. And then the last statement I'd like to say is, looking at this comprehensively, if anything that this tells us, looking at this from the 90,000-foot level, and this certainly is not anything new to most of the group, is that there's quite a bit of variance here. One can take the position that these are market forces and these are kind of rules of competition and how they navigate the landscape versus consistency in terms of the process itself. And it's very clear that there's a lot of variance that translates to a lot of confusion, especially at the registrant level. So if anything, I'd just like to make mention that, you know, this, if anything, shows how confusing this really is. And I think if anything adds credence to the fact that if there's anything that we can recommend out of this, it's to try to help address a lot of the confusion. Because, you know, this picture here only is from the top spectrum of registrars. You know, we still have 900 others out there that exist in terms of variance, and I think that just only helps muddy the water even more. So, thank you.
Any other comments before we go on to what is my last couple of comments on this before we go on to the report itself? All right. I'm now looking at the very last line of the spreadsheet. If you're looking at numbers, it's question number 9, but it is the last line. I have two comments. The first one is the shaded one. And I think what that says is a registrant may not transfer a domain unless they first renew it. And my understanding, reinforced by a comment Jeff Eckhouse made at one of our last meetings, is ICANN has sent out a clarification to registrars saying they must allow a domain to be transferred post-expiration. And if that's the case, this particular statement seems to be to go against that. Did I remember what Jeff had said properly? Anybody? Barry, your hand is still up. Is that from before or after? Ron?
Yeah, I'll take it
down. Ron?
Yes. Can you clarify when that clarification was sent out by ICANN? Because prior to that, there were at least two registrars that I was aware of that wouldn't even allow you to transfer to another registrar within 60 days before the domain expired. So you couldn't near the end of the active period even transfer. But this
I know there were registrars who would not allow a transfer after WHOIS was changed. I'm not aware of any who weren't allowing transfer near the end of expiration, but I'm pretty sure I remember that transfer is allowed after expiration, and Jeff clarified that although some registrars weren't doing it,
ICANN did issue a clarification on that. I don't remember exactly when. Michele?
Was that recent or really old?
I think
when they clarified
nine months ago or so, but Michele may have more information than I do.
Thank you.
On the post-expiry thing, I would have to bow to somebody else on that one. On the pre-expiry, the inter-registrar transfer policy is pretty clear as far as I'm concerned, in that if prior to the domain's expiry, except in a limited set of circumstances, a registrar cannot deny transfer. And there's a limited set of circumstances. You can read the policy for the exact ones, but I mean the general ones would be things like non-payment for the previous registration period, credit card abuse, that kind of thing. A registrar cannot deny the transfer prior to the expiry.
Yeah, and I think a UDRP in action also restricts things. Not sure. Yeah.
There's the UDRP. I mean, there's a list of pretty clear things. Sorry, I chair the working group on IRTP. I've been reading a lot of this and cat herding around it for quite some time.
And what do you know about what do you know about post expiration?
I'm not sure what Jeff is talking about because I'm not familiar with anything like that. The only one I'm familiar with recently, and as again I would bow to my colleagues and well obviously to Marika, was in relation to the fees, was in relation to redemption fees being posted.
Yeah, no, this is a different issue than that. Marika?
No, I know.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with those. Sorry.
Yeah, Marika?
This is Marika, because I'm just looking actually at the advisories that are posted on ICANN's website, and there's none that seems to refer to the issue that you're talking about. The only one as well, like Michaela says, is in relation to the inter-registrar transfer policy, where registrars cannot deny a transfer if the WHOIS details have been changed, the lock for 60 days. All the others are related to other issues. So
What I remember is that around EDDP time, there was a very clear statement made by ICANN saying domains can be transferred post-expiration. In Rob Hall's presentation, he mentioned at one point that although domains in theory can be transferred, because WHOIS may have been modified to point to the registrar or to point to somewhere else, in practice it may not be possible to actually effect the transfer, because from the registry's point of view, they're not the registrant anymore. And my recollection is Jeff said that a advisory came out some time ago, but I don't know when, it may not have been an advisory or something, reminding registrars that the transfer is allowed. James, do you happen to either remember what Jeff said or know the real answer?
No, I don't remember Jeff's comments, and I wouldn't presume to speak for him here, just trusting my memory to that.
Okay, we'll
this is Marika. I mean, it could relate to the fact that, you know, we're arguing, saying, well, if the registrant details have changed, they can deny the transfer on that basis. And maybe he was referring then to the advisory on the IRTP, which states that a registrant changed to WHOIS information is not a valid basis for denying a transfer request.
Yeah, I don't think so. Okay, well, let's not debate what he said. We'll check with him directly. And the other comment I had is my comment was an exclamation point on the description for Q. And it says, I'll read for those who can't find it quickly, a domain name can be transferred during the grace period to another registrar, reseller, or another registrar, reseller, or another registrar. Even if the reseller website says the expired domains cannot be transferred, they will be able to be transfer the domain because they're within the same registrar system. Which I find is an intriguing statement, saying the registrant needs to know what all their rights are, even if they're directly in contradiction to what their reseller said to them. So, again, points to the situation that we're asking an awful lot of a registrant in terms of knowledge, and I agree with all of our early comments that we need more education, but I wonder just how far that can go. Any other comments before we dispense for the moment with this huge spreadsheet and go on to the report? Seeing no hands, Marika, if you could put the report up.
Yes, if you give me 2 seconds.
I have no comments or questions until page 8. Does anyone have anything before that? Nothing. If you could go to the bottom of page 8, or we each do our own scrolling on this, right?
Yes.
All right. Can everyone read this, or do we need some other way of identifying where we are? Or if you have your own copy of it.
No, it's fine.
Okay. The bullet point, the last bullet point on the page, starting with during the auto-renew grace period, I had trouble reconciling the count of these versus what I found on the spreadsheet in line 1F, and it may be related to this 9 versus 10 registrars. So I'm not going to belabor the point right now, but if you can verify that the numbers actually coincide with the chart after you reduce the 10 to 9, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
I have nothing until the findings on page 14. Anyone have anything prior to that? It's like this is the Alan Greenberg show. Okay, in the first item of 5.2 findings, you introduced the concept of RAE for the first time. I really think we need to do that in a separate section, not just embedded in the first time it occurs. And
I think there's a glossary planned on page 3.
Yes, I know.
They would include those terms.
But I really think we need to define it and explain why we needed to come up with a new term. I mean, the RAA, for instance, uses the term registered name holder consistently to apply to post and pre-expiration. But because of the who is changing, we decided we better make sure we're talking about the one that was pointed to before, not the one that it looks like is the registrant of record. So I think for someone reading this clean without the history of our discussions, we need to explain why we found it necessary to come up with a new term.
Would you like to add that in the glossary as an explanation or somewhere?
No, I think it needs to be in the text. People typically only look at glossaries if they get really confused. Or when you're trying to find something that was defined earlier and you don't remember where. So I think it merits something earlier on in the process. I'm not sure exactly where it goes in this document. Probably prior to the registrar survey. Let me try to find the next one. Okay, in halfway down page 15, there is when and how are notices sent, and the lead-in description says most registrars confirm that notices are sent following expiration. I have a problem with the word most to begin with, because although it technically means more than 50%, people tend to read it as being a significant percentage of it. And in fact, in this case, it looks like 4 of the 9 send notices after, which I think is under 50%. So I'd appreciate it if we can use the term most carefully. And in this case, if you could check the actual statistics, because I think even technically most is incorrect here. But I may have counted wrong.
I thought it was indeed the majority, that there's only one that actually explicitly says that they're not sending notices, and one doesn't send notices because the domain names don't expire.
Following expiration?
Yes.
That's hold
question
on.
1C.
I found the first one says they don't. The third one, the shaded one, says they is silent.
And then there's one that
says
second, that they
the second to last comment says 1 or 0, essentially, and the last comment doesn't answer it at all. So I think there is I only counted 4 that specifically said they do send notices. We can handle this offline. I mean, if I counted wrong, I counted wrong. But in any case, I'd like to avoid the word most unless it's, 7 out of 9 or something like that.
So what do you prefer then as a word? Many?
More than 50%. Most, I think, is a subjective word, and many people interpret it varyingly.
So several?
Well, in this case, I would say 40, several, or 4 out of 9, or whatever the accurate number is, or nearly half. Ron?
Yes, I would prefer 4 out of 9 rather than just percentages, which require you to remember how many are in there. Just always say 4 out of 9, 3 out of 9, something like that. And I agree. Most almost is editorializing. Rather than reporting.
But in this case, I mean, sometimes it's a bit misleading as well, because, of course, only one actually confirms that they're not sending notices. The other case where they don't send notices is just because domain names don't expire. So you can argue there as well, there's no, they count maybe in the pile where it's irrelevant, or they shouldn't count for the negative number of not sending, because there's no.
No, you agree. The count should be 8 for this one. When we're factoring in a non-applicable. But again, I only count half of them definitively saying we send a message. Okay, we Marika, we can handle that outline. I was really homing in there on the most, which implies to many people that it was the vast majority as opposed to a technical majority.
I still can't say, but let's take it offline.
Okay, fine. In the top of page 16, the first answer, the one starting with 6 registrars, I think we need to explicitly say that, or may at the end, you say the fee may be the same as the one charged for RGP. And I think we need to explicitly say, or may be unspecified. Because for a number of the registrars, they say we're going to add an additional fee, but they're not specific as to what it is.
Okay.
I have a comment about the next one, but I think we'll skip it for the moment because it's really a legal interpretation. in the question of does the new page explicitly say the original registration has expired? That's question 1G. The way I counted the 9 is 6 said yes, 1 didn't answer, 1 said no, and 1 was non-applicable. So I have trouble getting the 8. Now, the 8 may have been because the 6 becomes a 7 because one of your columns was representing 2. But with 1 no answer, 1 no, and 1 non-applicable, I have trouble making 8.
I need to look back at that.
Yeah, no, I'm not that. I'm just raising the issue that it needs to be checked. And the next question goes back to what happens to email, and we've already discussed that during the when looking at the table, that we need to verify that. I have nothing till page 18. Anyone else? The question is on the first full question on page 18 is what is the duration of the renewal grace period provided by the registrar to the RAE? Again, we're using a term not well defined. I think here it needs to be explicitly said that this is what the registrars tell us is the practice, but is not what is specified in their agreements. On page 19, I have a typo. I don't think anyone's going to debate it. You have Artie instead of party, but 5 lines from the bottom.
Okay.
The next thing I commented on is on page 21 when we're talking about compliance reports.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at this more carefully than I did before. And in the dialogue, it talks about of the 1642 transfers, 644 of them use terms which might have something to do with expired or redemption. There are some explicit redemptions, which is mentioned in the text 73. There is also an explicit title, identifier called domain renewal. And what I found interesting is if you add those up, we come up to almost 1,300 ones that could likely have to do with renewal. And then some fraction, an unknown number, of course, of the 894 others may well have something to do with expiration issues. So I found it interesting that, you know, we started off by saying there weren't a lot of numbers in the reports the compliance team has. But in fact, if you add up all the ones which seem to point to something to do with post-expiration issues, the number is not small. Anything else in around here? Next one, I'd like an opinion from the group. In talking about the compliance reports, do we need to or should we be specifying that the compliance team only looks at issues with domains sold directly by registrars and that anything to do with resellers is, of course, not audited because it's not part of their current responsibilities, nor is it part of their capabilities? But again, someone reading this report without that background may not realize that. What's the feeling about putting a statement into that effect? Silence implies agreement. I knew I could trust you, Michaeli. Yes?
What was the statement you wanted to make exactly, sir?
The statement in talking about the compliance reports, just noting that compliance team only looks at issues related to domains that are sold directly by registrars and does not look at anything related to the website presence or the details of resellers.
Well, surely that's moot.
Well, it isn't moot if one doesn't realize that one thinks that the compliance team is auditing all, effectively all domains that are sold or all paths that domains are sold through. So I don't think it is moot.
Well, it is. Okay, I understand what you're saying, but I think there's a problem with how you're saying it.
Okay.
I'll explain. I mean, the thing is this. ICANN registrars, we are all bound by the RAA.
Right.
The vast majority of the registrars how do I phrase this? The registrars that would have been polled in relation to this questionnaire, the registrars who are involved in this working group, and basically the registrars that account for most of the activity within the .com zone, as it's the biggest one, would all be signed up to the 2009 RAA. Therefore, I mean, ICANN compliance can take compliance actions against the sponsoring registrar of any registration.
Correct.
So, I mean, the thing is that ICANN can only govern the registrars. Of course it can't govern, let's say, for example, somebody selling a domain on eBay or me selling domains in the pub, if I so choose. Okay.
Yeah, but I wasn't questioning whether they can govern it.
Right. I'm just trying to understand what you're getting
at.
This
section of the report is talking about what the audit experiences were of the compliance team. In other words, ICANN audits registrars because it is presumed that in occasional situations they either make mistakes or they're not following the rules. That's why they do audits to begin with. And
yeah.
They do, in cases such as the ones we're looking at here, they do 100% audits. They audit every registrar of record, not just a random sampling.
Yeah. Okay.
And I think it's important for someone reading this to understand that they are auditing the registrars, but that does not mean they are auditing every website that is selling domains. I mean, if someone isn't thinking about resellers or doesn't even understand the concept of resellers, they will assume that this was a 100% audit covering all experiences that the registrant finds.
Mm.
And all I'm suggesting is that we should point out that it isn't. We're not arguing whether compliance should be doing that or should have the tools to do that, just pointing out what numbers we're reporting on.
I kind of understand what you're saying. The thing is that because the reseller has a registrar and the registrar, all of the domains on the registrar's accreditation, regardless of where they were sold, are subject to the ICANN compliance audit. I mean, let's say, just say hypothetically, that ICANN receives a complaint regarding Registrar X. The ICANN has no visibility on whether the domain or domains in question were sold directly via Registrar X's website or via third party. But that isn't important because ultimately that registrar is still going to be responsible when it comes to any compliance action.
I'm not arguing any of that. Ron has a comment. Let's let Ron go in. Maybe he'll clarify it, or we'll keep on going round robin.
Right. Well, the issue that I'm thinking of is, has ICANN measured how many domains are through resellers? And the other aspect that I'd like to bring up is that in some cases, the reseller is owned by the same company that is the
registrar. Yes.
Yeah, registrar. So So are they counted? Are they accounted for differently in ICANN reports? If they, is that a way
the answer is simple. ICANN only looks at the registrar, does not look at the concept of reseller. So I don't think ICANN has any statistics on it, nor any other level of detail. And one of the registrars can clarify that if they want. But anyway, I'm not trying to argue what a compliance should do. I just want to point out to the novice reader of this that compliance only verifies verifies various things that are related to direct sale. So if compliance is checking, is the price of post-expiration recovery shown on the website, they can only look at the website of the registrar, not of the reseller, and therefore there may be resellers who are in violation of a particular ICANN rule, and compliance would not find it.
I disagree with that statement.
How can you disagree with it?
Very easily. I mean, if a reseller of a registrar conducts business in a manner that is in contravention of the RAA or ICANN policy, ICANN compliance is empowered to take that matter up with the registrar. I mean, it doesn't matter.
McKaylee, we're not arguing who's going to enforce, how it's going to be enforced. The question is, will compliance find it in an audit?
Yes, they will.
That is the question I'm asking.
Well, yes, they will, because ultimately they're auditing the registrar and the domains on the registrar's accreditation. How they ended up on the registrar's accreditation is not something that can be seen.
Marika, maybe you can clarify. My reading of these compliance reports is at least some of them verify compliance by looking at what is said on the website of the registrar. Is that not so? Things like, do they show the price of recovery or during the RGP?
Yes, I think that's correct.
So if a reseller does not show the price, they will not notice that. The registrar of record is still the one who's responsible for it, but we're not looking for responsible, we're looking for audits. Okay, maybe we need to take this offline with compliance. I think by not mentioning it, we are giving a different view than reality. But let's take it offline and we'll talk to compliance about it. Shiva, you had your hand up? Are you on mute?
No. May I?
Yes, please.
Yeah, my point relates to excluding resellers from the Section 5. Excluding resellers from the Section 5 would amount to an incomplete exercise. It's true that ICANN only has an agreement with the registrar, but it is also true that resellers are appointed by registrars and by extension they are responsible for the actions of the resellers. So in case something goes wrong, ICANN goes after registrars who in turn goes after the resellers and compliance is automatically enforced.
So you're suggesting that the registrars need to audit their resellers and send the information back to compliance.
Yes, that is not really right, and that is what that should be expected of a registrar. A registrar can't say, can't appoint a reseller who is free to do anything, and then the registrar comes to ICANN and say, no, it is not my doing, and I don't have control over this person or somebody else. That is not right.
Okay, something to file away for future action.
Mm-hmm.
Given that some registrars have as many as 30,000 resellers, that would be an interesting exercise.
So what was the interesting exercise? I couldn't make out what he was saying.
He's suggesting that registrars who have resellers should be required to audit their resellers for any of these issues that ICANN audits registrars for and forward the audit results on.
That's completely unreasonable.
Pardon me?
Well, here's a question for you, Alan. This is James speaking. Suppose that we were doing that. What is the impetus for then sharing that data?
One could also ask, the incentive for sharing it is if it's written into the contract that they must do it.
Well, I presume that
would be the incentive.
Okay, so my point is once again that while it may be a good idea to do that, I'm not debating that, and registrars could even audit and even have their own internal compliance or reseller compliance team.
And
why?
Some may.
Where would be the obligation to, why would that not be an internal business practice? Why would that necessarily be a matter of that is for public record?
I don't think anyone said it's for public record. I mean, when ICANN audits registrars and finds some not in compliance, they don't publish the names of the registrars who are not in compliance. They simply deal with it.
Not always.
Well, sometimes. Certainly in the kind of things we're looking at here, they're not necessarily published. I think a more interesting question is if ICANN feels the need to audit registrars because they believe there are times when the registrar may not be in compliance, what makes them think the registrar is capable of auditing all of its resellers without making the same sort of mistakes?
But that's totally irrelevant.
Well, no, I'm not defending the practice. I'm simply saying,
the ICANN Registrar Accreditation Agreement clearly states that the registrars are responsible for all domains on their accreditation, be they direct, indirect, or otherwise, and that we are responsible for our resellers. Any suggestion that we the registrar, should have to conduct an extra audit of our resellers, which we're already going to be responsible for if there is an issue which is reported regarding a domain on any of our accreditations, I'm sorry, but this is just total insanity. I mean, we are already have to answer to compliance for domains on our accreditation. No, I'm sorry, I can't accept that.
Okay. Shiva, is your hand up again or still from before?
Oh, that was from before, but I just want to respond to Michelle. And as long as the registrar is responsible for all registrations under his accreditation, as long as he does not say that he is not responsible for domains registered by a reseller, then it's not required to have any additional clauses of a registrar auditing the resellers or some other procedure. So as long as the registrar agrees to consider all domains registered under his accreditation as his responsibility or his doing, then it's okay.
Helen, you had your hand up?
I think I mentioned it. I couldn't understand the word you were saying.
We'll try to get it into a transcript.
Yeah, please do, because be perfectly honest, Alan. I mean, I'm sorry. I can be patient and I can be reasonable, but the thing is that this is going round and round in circles, and I don't think it's being of any particular help to anybody. As far as I'm concerned, I am more than happy to give up my time to work with the rest of the community in order to ensure that that registrants are given reasonable rights and everything else. But expecting me or anybody else to change our entire business practices and to extend out things that beyond anything that we're currently have to do, even though it's actually doubling up what we already have to do, I find wholly reprehensible. And I'm sorry, Siva, but I will never agree with anything that you have to offer in this working group, because to date you have yet to provide anything that is based on any experience of reality. And when you do so, then I might take your opinions into consideration. Until then, I'm afraid I can't. I'm sorry, I've had it.
Helen?
Hi. Yeah, no, I'm actually basically agreeing with McKaylee. I mean, I think the whole thing with retailers, obviously any registrar that's worth its salt deals with its retailers and does its own internal compliance. And to require anything like that is just going to make it very, very messy. I mean, sure, if the registrars want to voluntarily bring information in the discussion, that's different. But to require it, no, it's just not on. So why are we going around in these circles?
I'm not sure why we're having this discussion, since we're not talking about remedies at this point. We're talking about the details.
No,
of the report.
We were talking about registrars bringing in to compliance issues that have come with their resellers and bringing that in, and we're supposed to be discussing our dealings with our resellers.
Forgive me, but all I suggested, and I brought the subject up, was that the report note that ICANN compliance only deals with registrars and not resellers.
Yes, and that's where it should end.
Well,
absolutely.
That's all I was trying to get agreement on.
Well, I think we have agreed on that.
I'm not sure, but I'm willing to put it in and see, ask that it be put in and see who objects to it. As McKaylee pointed out, we need to get the wording clear, but I said I would speak to compliance, or Marika and I would speak to compliance and try to get wording that they're comfortable with.
Alan, may I suggest that it might not be a bad idea to get, say, David Giese in on one of these calls at some point in the next couple of weeks? Because I think some of these things about compliance, he could probably clarify a hell of a lot faster.
I'm sure. I would have no objection to that.
That would be a very good idea.
I can't hear what he's saying, so I can't listen to him because I can't actually hear him. So I have no idea what he's saying, so I can't actually hear it.
Yes, it is extremely difficult. It's not just I'm maybe it's just the phone connections for some of us, but I'm finding it almost impossible to follow what Shiva's been saying in the last two calls we've been on. So perhaps we need to look at what types of connections are being used for what types of purpose. But right now, it's also not the part of what we should be doing in this particular meeting anyway.
I would support that. Now, let's see if we can figure out where we are. We are almost out of time, and there was a request from McKaylee and Cheryl. I would suggest, I have a couple of more points here, but I would suggest we shelve them for the moment, continue with them at the next meeting, and turn the mic over to Cheryl or McKaylee to talk about whatever it is they wanted to talk about from the other meeting, from the RAAB meeting.
Alan, this is Marika. While I'm pulling up the document that McKaylee sent you, can I just confirm, would you like me to ask David or someone else from the compliance team, like William McCallaghan has been following the discussions of the working group, to participate in next week's call to answer some of those questions?
We need to have a brief discussion of what our next steps forward are, so let's delay that until we have that. I do want to give McKaylee and Cheryl a little bit of time.
Okay, I'll start off while McKaylee takes a deep breath. And yes, McKaylee, I can confirm that what you cut and paste to us is indeed the points that the RAA Group B work group wanted to ask the PNDR work group about. As we've identified previously in a number of our calls, the GNSO and ALAC work groups, which are RAA Group A and RAA Group B, are working on things that may, in fact, cross over with what we're doing in PNDR. And today's call, was an example where no less than three items on one page clearly were things that the work group that McKaylee and I were, and Sebra for that matter, was in, could be assumed by that work group to be being dealt with by this work group. What we were concerned about was that each work group does know who's doing what, and in fact that things are neither duplicated nor omitted. So I need to bring to this work group's attention the following items. And I'm just wondering, Marika, were you able to bring those up on the... Yes, she, look, God, very good, because I still had them in the email. There's 3 points in our some very much larger documents, as you might imagine. These are proposals that need to be future RAA amendments, and they are only up for... not even for discussion at this stage, but to prioritise as to whether or not discussion or not needs to go on. And it just happens to be that the first one is to require uniformity in grace periods, and it reflects from the part of the RAA, which is 3.7.5. Our next one that we needed to not have an opinion of, but an awareness in this work group, and to establish which work group is doing what about, is a matter that references 3.7.7.2. It's question marked in this document, but in fact it's 3.7.7.2, unless Michaeli tells me I was totally mad this morning and didn't remember it correctly, which is also possible. And that had to do with a proposal that there be a prohibition on a direct transfer clauses, and again, we're not looking at the merit of such a thing, but we want to know that it's not ignored by both work groups. In other words, a prohibition on transfer of registrant to registrar was the proposal there. And the final one was 10.5, which was again to do with redemption grace period services, where the proposal from one of the work group members was that registrars should be required to offer this service. Now, hopefully Michaeli's taken enough of a deep breath and he can briefly repeat his objections to many of those, but we can also get back to our RAA work group B to say, are we looking at any of these things? If so, fine. If not, equally fine, but we need to know who's doing what. Michaeli, did I do an introduction that was suitable for us?
That's perfectly fine, Cheryl. You're a lady as always.
Could I ask Michaeli, as you do your part, could you expand on what 3.7.5 is without us having to go look at it?
3.7.7.2.
No, 3.7.5. Uniformity in grace periods.
Right.
Well, I think what Danny was looking at is that at the moment, okay, basically this is, comes back to a lot of what we've discussed previously, and this is where I had problems with both redemption grace periods and uniformity in grace periods, in that, as has been discussed at length within this working group, while it's probably easier, between inverted commas, for registrars to offer certain grace periods, part of the problem is that there's also financial burden, because some of the registries expect the registrar to pay in order to offer that. In other words, that there's a kind of an the registry and the registrar aren't 100% in sync on this. So any introduction of uniformity in grace periods, or obligations to offer grace periods, would involve more than just a change to what the registrars are doing.
Under the current registry rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In that, obliging, let's say, for example, if you were saying to me, okay, Black Knight has to do X, Y, and Z, well, I'd go, okay, that's lovely, but you are aware of the fact that you're actually costing me a fortune, because that guy over there is still going to bill me regardless.
Hmm.
I think Jeff and a couple of the others were talking to this point in previous conversations. I understand the spirit of what Danny's was suggesting in 10.1 and 10.5. And I personally don't have an issue with what he's aiming for, but the thing is, I think it is something that, it's not as simple as going, hey, I'd like to have this. I'd like some sugar with my coffee.
Just for my clarification, in 10.1, it's uniformity across registrars that we're talking about.
I would assume
yes.
so.
Okay.
Yes,
it's not uniformly across the different grace periods or something. Again, I didn't go and look what 3.7.5 says. So it's uniformly across the registrars. Okay. A uniform experience regardless of what registrar you're dealing with.
Well, basically, the entire discussion is all about the registrar accreditation agreement.
Yeah.
So I would be fairly confident to say that, yes, he was talking about all registrars for all 3 points. But the problem is when, as we've discussed, grace periods don't rely solely on the registrars. There's also an interaction from the registries.
Right.
I
guess my reaction to all three of these is these are things that in theory are within the scope of this PDP. Whether we will address them in a way which satisfies, you know, Danny, for instance, is up for grabs. One could imagine us coming out with something which will remove from him any obligation from this being handling in RAB. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Or we may end up with a situation where we address it in a way which is totally unsatisfactory and still needs to be addressed in the longer-term RAA. So my advice would be these have to be kept on the books on the RAAB list because it's not a given that we are going to address them to the satisfaction of the wider community.
Well, okay, just one question I would have there is, I mean, how are you defining satisfaction? Before you answer,
well, satisfaction
meaning Danny will be happy, and there will be bunnies bouncing around the place, or does satisfaction in the case of, well, we've actually covered this quite comprehensively. Now, whether he likes the outcome or not, it has been covered comprehensively. I'm not trying to be, what's the word? Oh.
And just while I've got the microphone for a minute, though, we were also discussing the fact that in our discussions in this work group, a better understanding of rights, responsibilities and obligations may indeed go a long way to giving general satisfaction from a community concept on this and perhaps not requiring to go down these somewhat more draconian proposals.
Let's let Marika get in. She's had her hand up for a while.
Sorry, Marika.
I'm sorry. I think that was from before.
I was going to say I was just from before.
That's why it was so long.
I apologize.
I guess my position is we may come up with something here which is eminently fair and reasonable to registrants, and gives them a completely predictable, understanding of how their domain will unfold without uniformity.
Okay.
I'm not saying that's the outcome, but we may well end up with something which is totally satisfactory, gives different registrars the ability to have different business models, but does not provide uniformity. And similarly for the direct transfer clauses. I mean,
Alan, that was very much a point that Paul Diaz was making on the call as well, on the other call as well, that there are important differentiation points are made available by a lack of uniformity in terms of the rules here.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me as someone who is not a registrar and have no vested interest in registrars and I make no money off of it, would I prefer to have seen the whole concept of direct transfer where registrars assign the domain to themselves or auction or sell it, would I prefer to have that concept never shown up in this world? Yes. But I'm not sure I can turn the clock back right now and do it, and I'm not convinced that that's what the outcome of this PDP is going to be. That's looking too far into the future that I can't do.
Well,
it could be an outcome of this PDP, but I don't feel comfortable saying that it will be an outcome of this PDP. So if it's important to people that it be one of the ultimate things that are considered in the RAA process, I think it needs to stay on the list of the RAAB.
Well, the thing that I raised in the previous call in the other group was that, I mean, the direct transfer possibility does not exist for some of the CCTLDs, but that doesn't actually isn't the root of the problem that Danny or other people might be trying to address. I mean, the thing is that, say, for example, in the case of COUK, I, as a registrar, or, well, the owner of a registrar, operating registrar, whatever you want to put it, I can't transfer domains directly to me or my company,
right,
on expiration. But that doesn't mean that the domains will be available for general registration either, because there are plenty of people who will catch those domains as they're deleted, which I think is what the root problem or perceived problem that Danny might have been trying to address, which goes back to the entire thing that we've been discussing at length over the last couple of months about the entire thing about, you know, making sure that users know that, you know, if you do not pay for your domain name, it will... you will no longer have usage of it. I mean, there's a lot more to that. But maybe,
I think there's a whole bunch of things at play here. Some of them are purely philosophical. I mean, there are some people not on this call at the moment who feel it is objectionable that just because you happen to be the one who sold the domain name originally, that you should have the essentially first right of refusal if it is no longer required by the original registrant. That it should go into some market where, you know, random forces determine who gets it on the pickup or something like that. And in fact, there are ways of doing that. You know, .org has put in place processes where you cannot hit the registry a million times a second to try to pick up a name as it drops. You know, so one can do that, but I don't. That's not within our scope. That's an interesting discussion to have. It may be discussion that gets had somewhere, but I don't think it's our discussion. So there are a lot of people who want to see things coming out of all of these processes mushed together, but I'm not sure that they're the ones that we need to be addressing here. So if people have specific outcomes in mind, they may or may not come out of this particular PDP, and if they're important, they have to be kept in parallel in the other one. That's my reading of it anyway. All right, we're 1 minute over, and we did want to talk a little bit about next steps. Can people have a couple more minutes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you read through the report in detail, when it starts coming to recommendations and what action do we take, there's a lot of statements like some people feel that there should be predictability and uniformity. Some people feel this, some people feel that. I think we need to start quantifying which of them is there enough support within this group, or at least some support within this group, or within the wider community to know how we are going to go forward. Otherwise, as Michele has put on a number of other things, we will continually go round and round in having the same discussions again. In talking to Marika earlier, one of the things that the other groups have done is done a survey. You know, in some cases they do it, a survey of what recommendation should we make. I'm thinking of doing it at an earlier stage in that, of saying essentially what issues do we address to try to find solutions to, and try to put together a list of questions, certainly for everyone in this working group and perhaps for a wider argument or wider community, of where should we be focusing our time, where should we be trying to come to closure on what issues. We're always going to find there are some people who object to everything in any direction, and this doing a survey seems to be a reasonable way to try to identify where the interests are and where we should be focusing our time. Wondering how people think about it.
If it moves it forward, Alan, then I'm in favor of it. That's
okay.
A predictable answer from me, so, you know, no surprise there.
Marika and I are willing to put some time to try and identify what the questions are. Does anyone else want to work on this with us, or do you want to entrust it to us and we'll come back with a prototype?
It's more fun shooting you down after the fact, Alan.
I'm
yeah,
sure.
I wasn't going to say it quite that brutally, but that's your company, Kelly, from me.
If I can be clear, it lessens your work and it's more fun.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is the second part. The first of the second part of what you just said lessens your work. I've seen some of these surveys. I've even contributed to some of them. And some of them are more torturous, more long, and more, thank you very much, I'm bored now, I'm not going to bother finishing it, than others. So I would prefer it to be clearly effective, and even if it turned out to be, you know, several short bites rather than a I don't really have time to do this now type event, you'll get much more from all of us. Me and
Cheryl, it sounds like you're volunteering to be the first one to review it before the group sees it.
I'm happy to review.
Okay.
If you want to take it over to me as well, Alan, to have a look over it, I don't have a problem with that.
Okay. We will try to get something done in the next, I hesitate to say couple of days, but soon, hopefully before the next meeting.
When is the next meeting?
That's the question we now have to quickly address. If we continue with the weeklies, we are talking about the week of February 2nd. If we skip one to give us time to complete the questionnaire and to give anyone else time to look at the report, I really think if you haven't gone through the draft report we have so far, it really needs to be done to make sure that, you know, we're not going back and changing things way after the fact.
I think it's a skip one and do the survey story myself.
Okay. One recommendation to skip a meeting and hold the next one on the 9th. I actually support that myself. Everyone else?
Well, I'm not available next week, so it suits me fine.
We have no, we have one check mark. All right, no meeting next week. We'll have a meeting in 2 weeks. We will definitely have a draft questionnaire out before that.
Okay.
I promise on Marika's behalf.
Hey, very good, Alan.
Thanks for that.
I said we will have one out. I didn't say she will have one out.
Yes, but I promise that you will now join the ALAC XCOM for a short meeting on Nairobi planning. So that's fair.
Say that again. I have another teleconference now. You're telling me.
You now have another teleconference. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, all of you. And Cheryl, it will have to wait a few minutes. I have something to do, or I won't eat dinner tonight. But I will be on the call. I will be on the call in a while.
And it won't be a long call, but just a couple of minutes. We'll let you have a small break.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Bye.
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 Thanks, bye.